I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting of the Research, Innovation, Legal, and Legislative Committee, and I'd like to welcome Jessica Seaman as the new RILA Recording Secretary. Jessica, would you please call the roll?
Trustee Rita Athos?
Yes, present.
Trustee Montague Fields?
Here.
Trustee Montague?
Here.
Trustee Veronica Ferraro?
Here.
Trustee Bob Pritchard?
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasserlund?
Here.
Board Chair Jennifer Manima?
Here.
Committee Chairman John Butler?
Thank you. Mr. Perry, would you please verify that we have a quorum, that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been posted?
Madam Chair, appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and you do have a quorum for today's meeting.
Thank you. May I have a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The agenda is approved. As we did not meet in May of this year, we have the minutes of February 2019 meeting before us. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting of February 7th, 2019?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are approved. At this time, I would like to recognize the members of the University Advisory Committee representing the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Committee, Professor Jason Hanna, Professor Kendall Threw, Faculty Senate President, Catherine Doderlane, and Jeffrey Royce. Do any of you have any comments you'd like to make to the board?
Well, at the risk of raising expectations yet again, I'm going to defer my comments to the full board meeting here in a few minutes, hopefully. But I do want to introduce my colleague, Jason Hanna, who's new to the UAC. And Jason, you want to say a couple words?
No. I'm glad to be at the UAC. I'm from the Department of Philosophy. That's it.
Anybody? And then Jeffrey Royce, to my left side, is the new president of the Operating Staff Council. Jeffrey, do you have anything to say? And you already know Kathy, so her reputation precedes her, so thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to take this opportunity, first of all, you probably noticed that I am not Chairman Butler. He is not here today, and I've had the privilege of filling in for him at this meeting. He has had an unavoidable absence, but I believe he's on the phone.
He is. So the Trustee Butler is at a work-related event, and so the board will, he is on the phone, and the board will have to approve, assuming they do approve, he can participate in the meeting.
I'd like to entertain a motion to allow Trustee Butler to participate in the meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, you're approved. You can participate in the meeting, so that's great. While I am very new to all of this, I did have the opportunity during my trustee orientation to meet with Dr. Blasey and the people representing RILA, the committee, and I have to tell you how extremely impressed I am with the work that's being done at the university. When you're on the outside, you have a feel for what you think is going on, but when you really get to sit down and talk to people, it's very impressive. And along those lines, this week, and I chaired this with Chairman Barsima in another hat that I wear, I'm working on an immigration and refugee committee. And we were looking for speakers for that committee, and someone told me that they knew of a young man who worked for the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition, and I should reach out to him and see if he would be a speaker. And so I did call him, and as we were talking and I looked through his bio, I saw that he was an NIU grad from the law department. And so I told him that I had just been appointed to the Board of Trustees, and completely unsolicited, he said to me that NIU had changed his life, that he was a DACA student, that he wanted to go to law school, didn't know if he'd have the opportunity, came here, met with the professor or the head of the department. They found a way for him to go through the program, and he did receive his law degree. And then when he came out, he said he had numerous opportunities to go to private law firms. But he felt after what NIU had given him, he needed to give back. And so he went ahead. I think it's one of those stories that I was extremely impressed with, and I'm very, very proud to serve on this board. So with that, I would like to ask Vice President, Mr. Perry, we have to have public comment. Have any members of the public registered a written request to address the board in accordance with state law and Board of Trustee bylaws?
We've received no request.
Okay, thank you. Now, at this point, I'd like to ask Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, Dr. Blasey, for comment.
Thank you, Trustee Athus, and thank you for chairing the committee this morning. And good morning to the rest of the board. Before I begin, I'd like to welcome the newest member of RIPS to our team, and that's Mark Hankins, who's our Assistant Director for Technology Transfer. It's his first day on the job, and his first other duties as assigned was to attend a board meeting. So welcome, Mark. So today's agenda includes state, federal, and sponsored program reports, followed by a faculty presentation. First, Jenna Mitchell, our state legislative liaison, will give us an update on the good budgetary and legislative year. After that, Dr. Anna Quieter, Assistant Vice President for Federal Relations, will give the FY19 summary of her work in DC and some observations on the federal scene, which is always of great interest, particularly lately. With the third of our regular reports, Dara Little, Assistant Vice President for Sponsored Programs Administration, will give the FY19 summary of activities in sponsored programs. And finally, we'll have an interesting faculty presentation by Dr. Nicole Ledoux on STEM education research. But before turning the podium over to Jenna, I'd like to give a brief update on the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, or NICS, as we've taken to calling it. As a reminder, NICS reflects our scholarly vision to prepare Northern Illinois for a century of change through preparation for a changing climate, changing demographics, and advancing technology. As Jenna will report, funding for the Discovery Partners Institute and Illinois Innovation Network, led by the University of Illinois system, was reappropriated this year, and that reappropriation also funds NICS. We learned that the funding will now be handled by the Capital Development Board and are awaiting word from the board and the U of I system about how and when to proceed. We consider the movement of the funds from the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to the Capital Development Board a positive development. It'll have somewhat less reporting requirements, and we are used to working with the Development Board on large projects. The Illinois Innovation Network, comprised of all state universities, has now formed and offers a venue for NICS to integrate with other efforts at other campuses. While waiting for the funding to be released, we are preparing to engage our faculty on the design of the NICS facilities and programs. So I would pause for a moment if you have any questions on NICS or where we are with that project.
Are there any questions?
Okay, then Jenna, would you like to give your report?
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all this morning on what has been happening in Springfield over the course of the last year and the 2019 spring session. Next slide, please. This spring session was particularly positive for higher education, a welcome change in trends. The final budget for fiscal year 2020 included a 5% increase for NIU operations. While this is a step in the right direction and a welcome increase, NIU's state funding still remains 6% below where we were in FY15, the last year before the budget impasse. So there is still much work to be done. The General Assembly also passed a multi-year capital program for the first time since FY10. This included $130 million total for NIU, $77 million for new construction, and $53 million for capital renewal and deferred maintenance. It's very important to note that this funding is not something that is immediately made available to the university in FY20 or in any given fiscal year. This is going to be a six-year process, and the release of funds depends on a lot of different factors, such as bond sales, project expenditure approval from the governor's office, grant agreement execution with state agencies, et cetera. As mentioned by Dr. Blasey, in addition to new capital funding, the $500 million for Discovery Partners Institute was reappropriated this year, of which NIU is slated to receive $15 million. We're waiting for that process to move forward as well, but are poised organizationally to move forward. Lastly, Governor Pritzker delivered on year one of his commitment to increase MAP funding by 50% over the next 4 years. The 12.5% increase in FY20 equates to an increased investment of $50 million. It's projected to increase the number of awards by 10,000 students in fiscal year 20, and it can only go up from there, closing the gap of unfunded eligibility that we have in Illinois, currently around 82,000 students who are eligible for MAP but don't receive it due to a lack of funding from the state. Next slide. NIU had a significant presence in Springfield over the course of the last year, Chicago as well, when hearings were held there. President Freeman personally testified at six committee hearings, and we received very positive feedback. I want to specifically highlight that following our testimony before the Appropriations 2 Committee in the Senate, where we were making our request for FY20, I received an email from the higher education chairman who said the following: Dr. Freeman's presentation was impressive and showed committee members that NIU is a pace setter. Under her leadership, we can expect this reputation to continue. NIU also hosted and co-hosted three events in Springfield this past year. We held our first annual Advocacy Day in April, which was attended by 38 advocates, including alumni, faculty, staff, and Chairman Barsima. We look forward to increasing attendance and expanding the reach of NIU's advocates in 2020. We co-hosted a public university advocacy day with our sister institutions. For this event, a small team of campus leadership, including Trustee Athis and Catherine Squires, traveled down to Springfield to meet with legislators and then attend an evening reception. And lastly, we co-hosted a joint caucus breakfast with the University of Illinois, at which President Tim Killeen and President Freeman addressed members of the NIU caucus and the University of Illinois caucus over breakfast to discuss all of our legislative priorities for the upcoming session, and also to discuss where we are at in the status of Discovery Partners Institute, as NIU was the first non-U of I campus to be announced as a hub. Next slide, please. Aside from committees and events, the largest piece of my role this last year revolved around the tracking of legislation. Since the start of the calendar year, there have been over 6,000 bills filed, with nearly 20% having a direct or indirect impact on the university. The bills impacting NIU are not specifically limited to higher education, as policies from pensions to state government regulation to labor, et cetera, all impact the way that NIU operates, the funding that we have, and also our employees and our students in different ways. To manage this process of tracking all of the bills that were impacting the university, we procured a subscription to HANA Illinois, which is a software that helps with status updates and filing notices based on different statutes that are being amended or added. However, the true heavy lift here was bill analysis and understanding how exactly NIU was impacted. And the analysis process would not have been possible if it weren't for the relationships that I've established with leaders across campus and the time and commitment that their offices have contributed to this effort. I want to specifically note that Police Chief Phillips played a significant role in breaking down various pieces of legislation, at different times speaking directly with legislators to educate on the accompanying impacts. And in some instances, NIU helped brainstorm the policy ideas that turned into legislation. For example, Rebecca Babel, NIU's Director of Financial Aid, was asked to help think of ways that we could improve the MAP grant program, and one of her ideas ended up being filed in both chambers. This demonstrates the capabilities that we have to guide and improve state policy. This leads into my next slide. There were various pieces of legislation moving this past year on which NIU took the lead or played a leadership role in driving forward. On this piece, I want to specifically note the passage of legislation that will allow NIU to sell university-owned property that is deemed surplus and retain the funds for deferred maintenance expenditure. This was a significant piece of NIU's legislative agenda in 2019 and years past, and it was a big win for that to be signed into law by the governor last week. I also want to quickly note the leadership of Sherry Taylor from NIU's Center for Governmental Studies. This is ongoing this summer, not necessarily in the spring 2019 session, but she is doing significant work to help the state prepare for the 2020 census. Sherry and her team not only created a statewide index map of the hard-to-count populations, but she's personally advising the governor's advisory committee on as it determines how to allocate the nearly $30 million that was appropriated this year for census efforts in Illinois. Next slide. Thank you. There are a few miscellaneous policy pieces that I'd like to highlight. First, Illinois just became the third state to mandate Illinois high school seniors to fill out a free application for federal student aid. Louisiana saw very positive outcomes from this policy in terms of increasing the number of students, high school graduates, that go on to apply and enroll at their post-secondary institutions in state. And we hope that this will have the same impact in Illinois. It was very exciting to be at the front of an up-and-coming policy trend that other states have seen positive outcomes from. And that kind of gives you a sense of the change in direction that we're seeing at the state level in Springfield in terms of higher education policy. Illinois also passed gambling expansion and legalized sports betting. It's important to note that NIU athletic teams are thankfully exempt from this legislation, which is something that we were not certain would be the case until the very end of negotiations. In January, the state voted to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour over the next 5 years, and this is something that will impact NIU's finances. It's currently estimated to be an $11 million impact by full implementation. The new unfunded mandate is one of many that we hope the General Assembly and the Governor's Office will take note of when making budget decisions in future years. Lastly, come January 1, 2020, recreational cannabis will be legal in Illinois. It's important to note that the bill does contain a provision that states Illinois universities and colleges must still abide by the Federal Drug-Free Schools Act. Therefore, the legalization of cannabis does not apply to NIU on this campus. Next slide, please. Over the course of the next 4 months and throughout the spring 2020 session, I will continue to advocate for NIU's priorities and educate members on the importance of investing in higher education. My main points of focus being getting NIU back to its FY15 pre-budget impasse funding level, which I believe the board just voted to approve, advancing the process of funding release to initiate new capital projects on campus and see the $130 million that NIU received this year reappropriated and trickled out over the next 6 years, and seeking appropriate regulatory reforms to promote efficiencies. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for Jenna? Just before, Jenna, can you talk a little bit about the NIU caucus in Springfield? How many people are actually alumni of the university, and how many people have joined?
There are 24 members of the NIU caucus currently. 10 are alumni. So state reps and senators who actually attended NIU, whether undergrad or law school. And the other 14 have ties to NIU or are regionally located around here. So Senator Severson represents the DeKalb campus. He's a member of the caucus because he has the university in his district and cares about its success. And then we have Senator Don DeWitt, whose son attended NIU, and he's relatively close to the proximity as well. So those are some of the non-alumni members that are a part of the caucus.
And I had the opportunity to meet with several of those members. It is amazing how supportive they are of NIU, and the other thing was how knowledgeable they are of NIU. Are there any other comments, questions?
Jenna, I'd just like to compliment you on a very successful legislative agenda this year in what you've done in many different areas. Can you elaborate a little bit more, and maybe someone else will need to, on the impact of the minimum wage on the university? Is this going to be phased in over 4 years? How can we manage how the minimum wage applies to our student employees or others?
I can speak to the phase-in because it's in the legislation. It's over the span of 5 years, and it starts, I believe, this next January. It becomes effective January 1. So it's a six-month impact in the first fiscal year and then ramps up 4 more times. But I will have to defer to someone from Human Resources or Finance for additional comments on the impact.
And it's my understanding that that minimum wage applies to interns as well as part-time employees or full-time employees?
That's not something that I can say for 100% certainty, but I'll look into it and can let you know.
Comment also, if you will, about the University Liaison Caucus and how that is going, if it's effective, or does your success really relate to your efforts independent of what others have been doing?
The liaisons at the other 8 public institutions and I work very closely together. During session, we have meetings weekly. We're always in communication over a group chat. And I would say that the success this last year is a combined effort of everyone. There are definitely certain pieces of legislation where someone takes the lead, but I would say it's the success and the way that higher education is being looked at more positively in Springfield is definitely a combined effort across all public institutions.
Very good. Well, again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions?
I just wanted to say, A, I would echo Bob's comments. What a great job you're doing. So thank you, Jenna. And I think you were, it was imperative that we have our own representative in Springfield versus using contractors. Clearly, you have proven that to be the case. So, thank you. The advocacy day that I attended. Well done. Thank you to Trustee Athos for helping to organize that in your role, in your previous role with the Alumni Association. But I would encourage all of the board members, and I would encourage everybody in this room that. When we have our next one, which I'm assuming there will be, to participate in that. It was a great experience for me. It was my first time in Springfield in a long time. I was very impressed with how well it was organized. I was very impressed with how willing the different legislators were to talk to us. I was impressed with how hard it is to find them sometimes. But it was a very worthwhile day. I found it to be a very great use of my time. So as the next one rolls around, whenever it does, I would really encourage the trustees and everybody in this room to participate in that. I think this year we had 45 or 50 people, somewhere in that ballpark.
Ended around 38, but yeah. We're shooting for over 50 this year.
Right. I mean, so. What's an ideal number that you'd like to have down there that you can manage?
I'd like to see it ramp up over time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, we have over 100 next year. I don't know if logistically how that would work just yet.
Great. Good.
We look forward to the day that is the case.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you get the date out as soon as you know it'll be, that'll be great.
Yes.
Just to get on the calendar.
We're waiting for the legislative calendar to be released. It usually comes out right after veto session, so end of November, early December. And we have 4 tentative dates on the calendar so that we could get everything reserved in Springfield. But once we see how the calendar shakes out, we'll pick a date and send out a save the date.
Thank you. And the $11 million that you stated for the minimum wage hit to us, is that an annual cost for us, or is that a cumulative over a certain amount of time?
No, and I'd like to defer to
Vice President McGill has some additional comments to make on that.
Sure. So the $11 million that Jenna referenced, that's over the expected duration of the ramp up. So that would take us through 2025 when the new minimum wage of $15 goes into effect. So annually it starts the first increase happens in January 2020. And I'll just preface this with these are very preliminary estimates. Okay. Of course, they're going to get more refined, but it's about $350,000 in that first time, and then it ramps up to about $2.5 million in that final year.
Thank you.
Can I do a follow-up question? Does it include all employees? Are any exempt from that?
Not to my knowledge. This would include all of our employees, including students. Student employees as well.
I have a question about the FAFSA mandate. Mm-hmm. Do we expect to see any changes or implications, whether they be positive or negative, or do we basically expect to see no change here at NIU?
I would say that it's positive because a large part of students not even applying to school is because they just presume that it's not affordable. Mm-hmm. And filling out the FAFSA makes you eligible for monetary award program grants, Pella eligibility, and a lot of financial aid assistance starts with FAFSA. You have to fill that out to qualify and to even receive notice that you're eligible for a certain award. So I think it will show a lot of students in Illinois that they actually can afford to carry on their education, and I think that we will see a positive impact like Louisiana.
Okay.
Are there any additional questions? Thank you, Jenna. Appreciate the report. And I would just like to add, putting on my previous hat as a board member of the Alumni Association, in addition to hiring Jenna, which was a brilliant move, Dr. Freeman and Vice President Streb have been so open to the alumni who are just waiting to be unleashed, to use a word we use, to work with the General Assembly, to being open to having them be part of an advocacy. So the whole team that's been together has been really important and impressive. So thank you all.
Well, thank you, Trustee Athas. As you know, you indicated in your beginning comments, no one tells our story better than our alumni, and so we appreciate the alumni participation.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time, Dr. Quire will shift us to the federal scene.
Good afternoon now, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I will provide a brief overview of the Office of Federal Relations activities from the past fiscal year and provide a brief update on current federal relations issues. Next slide, please. Outlined here are the types and frequency of activities that we have led or facilitated this past year. This data, along with more detail, is included in the Federal Relations Written Report in your packets. I will provide a few illustrative highlights to discuss. Next slide, please. In March of 2019, NIU hosted our second annual congressional reception on Capitol Hill. This event was done in partnership with Federal Relations, the Alumni Association, and the Foundation, and it was timed to align with the Political Science Department student spring break trip to Washington, D.C. I'm highlighting this event today because it unites numerous facets of this office's service to the university, which includes policy advocacy, relationship building with Congress and the federal agencies, student engagement, alumni engagement, and visibility raising for NIU. The reception convened about 90 attendees, including NIU alumni Congresswoman Robin Kelly and Congressman Don Bacon, as well as Congressman Bill Foster and Myanmar Ambassador Aung Lin. All are pictured here. Other federal stakeholders in attendance were staff from 11 congressional offices and the National Science Foundation. We sponsored the attendance of 5 federally funded NIU faculty researchers who, ahead of the reception, participated in meetings with federal agencies or on Capitol Hill, and they showcased their work at the reception. The faculty were Karen Sammons of Biological Sciences, Victor Gansini of Geographic and Atmospheric Sciences, Nicole Ledoux of Geology and Environmental Geosciences, whom you'll hear from shortly and who is pictured here, Eric Jones of History and the Center for Southeast Asian Studies, who is also pictured here, and Federico Chimarella of Mechanical Engineering. This was a marquee event that we intend to hold next year. Next slide. We seek to support faculty in their interactions with the federal government through a variety of ways listed here. As I just mentioned, showcasing faculty excellence and providing opportunities for engaging with federal policymakers is a key objective of our annual congressional reception. Pictured here are a few more recent examples of faculty engagement. Pictured on the left is Professor Ralph Wheeler, chair of the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry. He is discussing his million-dollar federally funded STEM education programs with Professor Diane Suvain, who oversees the National Science Foundation as the chair of the National Science Board and is a leading voice in federal science and technology policy. Meetings during this trip in April led to Professor Wheeler's joint nomination to the National Science Board by NIU and his professional association, the American Chemical Society. In the center is Dean Don Peterson of the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, pictured during his visit to the House Science and Technology Committee in May. He spent the day on Capitol Hill discussing his internationally renowned expertise in exoskeletons and exosuits, as well as the newly proposed engineering PhD programs, including the Industry Fellows Program. Pictured on the right is Vice President Jerry Blasey, whom you know, and other senior research officers of leading public and private universities after meeting with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy in July of 2018. He participated in the discussion of challenges and opportunities facing research universities at a critical time for this office when it did not have a Senate-confirmed director. Next slide. Providing enriching opportunities and content for students is also a priority. And we work with students in a variety of ways listed here. Here are a few examples from this past year. Pictured on the left is Tiana Briscoe, who is one of our four NIU-sponsored congressional summer interns in our annual program. Here she is receiving a scholarship from the Illinois State Society of Washington, D.C., from its president, former Illinois Congressman Jerry Weller, as well as her internship host, NIU alumna Congresswoman Robin Kelly. Pictured in the center is Vanessa Garcia, who joined students from the University of Illinois and Northwestern University in discussing federal science and education issues with Congressman Rodney Davis. With NIU sponsorship, she joined over 60 Research One universities from across the nation at the Catalyzing Advocacy in Science and Engineering Workshop and Congressional Visit Day. On the right are environmental science and mechanical engineering students Kayla Coing and Dequan Ishman, respectively, who received sponsorship to join the political science spring break trip to Washington. As a scientist myself, I enjoy mentoring NIU's talented STEM students to explore policymaking and consider opportunities to contribute to evidence-based policymaking. Next slide. This past year saw continued discussion of numerous federal policies that would affect NIU with little resolution. Assistant Vice President Dara Little will discuss some hot topics in research policy during her remarks, so I will focus on briefly updating you on higher education, immigration, and appropriations. The Higher Education Act is unlikely to be reauthorized this year. The House has completed its scheduled hearings covering college affordability and accountability, college non-completion, the role of community colleges and historically black colleges and universities, and minority-serving institutions in economic mobility, and alternative pathways to a degree. The Senate has just begun its hearings. We could see draft text from either chamber as early as the fall of this year, but more likely it'll be released in 2020. Regarding immigration, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, continues to make its way through the courts, with the U.S. Supreme Court expected to hear arguments in November and release its ruling in the spring or summer of 2020. We are closely monitoring student and high-skilled employment immigration policy as well. Regarding appropriations, fiscal year 2019 saw modest year-on-year increases to research-focused agencies, as well as sustained support for student aid programs and international education. In July, Congress and the White House struck a deal to raise the budget caps for fiscal years 2020 and 2021. All indications are that we can expect flat to slightly increased funding levels for NIU appropriations priorities. That said, policy issues can impact the budget timeline, so we are not out of the woods yet for fiscal year 2020 proceeding smoothly. Next slide. On these and other issues, we engage policymakers individually and collectively. We work with the University of Illinois System, University of Chicago, and Northwestern University on a near daily basis, as well as other Illinois institutions, and through professional associations and topical national coalitions, some of which are listed here. We maximize our impact through these partnerships. Next slide. I serve on the Government Affairs Executive Committee of the Association of Public and Land Grant Universities, and last year I served as president of the Science Coalition. In these roles, I lead government affairs colleagues from top American research universities. And I work to elevate the policy priorities that matter to NIU, such as the democratization of science, access to education, and our federal funding priorities. For example, last year I encouraged APLU to include two programs of importance to NIU in their annual appropriations priorities that are distributed widely on Capitol Hill and among public research universities. These programs were an advanced manufacturing program at the National Institute of Standards and Technology and a regional innovation program at the Economic Development Administration. I'm also working to bring our message of inclusive excellence to Capitol Hill by creating stronger ties between public research universities and the influential Congressional Tri-Caucus, which is composed of the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Also, this year I was appointed to the Marshall Scholarship Selection Committee at the British Embassy, and I'm excited to bring that national scholarship expertise back to campus. Next slide. During the upcoming year, we plan to continue to build on our advocacy and engagement successes while remaining nimble and responsive to the needs of federal stakeholders and our campus community. This year is off to a great start. Just last week, Congressman Bill Foster and Congresswoman Lauren Underwood invited Provost Beth Ingram to join them on a public panel discussing student loan debt and college affordability. Also last week, NIU and the City of DeKalb co-hosted Congressman Adam Kinzinger for a tour of the city and campus focused on economic development. And thank you to Trustee Pritchard for participating in that. Looking ahead to September and October, we're planning to host Congresswoman Underwood for her first official visit to campus. And Congressman Foster and Congressman Underwood are tentatively scheduled to attend our annual STEM Fest in October. We are also working with the Office of Congressman Krishnamoorthy to plan his first official visit to campus. Looking even further ahead, 2020 is a presidential election year, which brings considerable uncertainty to the policy agenda for Congress and the administration. We are prudently working with our peer institutions in Illinois and our national organizations to monitor campaigning as it progresses. Next slide. Thank you for your time today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions or comments for Dr. Quitter?
If you had the top three things that we're looking for to get out of our federal elected officials, what would those things be, the top three?
So I would say, number one, favorable policy and funding positions. Number two, understanding of the university's portfolio and opportunities to shine a light on the great work that's happening here. And number three, I would say opportunities for our students. We work hard across the Illinois delegation to ensure that we have strong relationships that will place our students for our congressional internship program. But I defer, though, if Vice President Blasey or President Freeman or others have thoughts.
So I would make a comment, especially with respect to Anna, Dr. Quitter's last priority. We view this as a very long game, and we want our students to start getting involved in Washington. And that's why we have the interns, and that's why we have the spring break. And our faculty visits as frequently as we can so that we start influencing policy in a significant way with a number of our grads and our faculty, say, in the next 5 to 10 years.
Any additional questions?
Just make a comment. I know we're about to receive a presentation on funding grant-wise, and a good piece of that is from federal sources. So thank you for your efforts in being a part of that. The great work that you continue to do for us in Washington. Again, as said, the same comments about Jenna and her role here in the state. I think it's very important, you know, for us to have the representation in Washington that wears the NIU hat. So thank you for all your hard work on it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, wait, we have one.
I would just ask for a little elaboration on the interns that go out to Washington. I'm assuming a lot of that is done through the department, but you have to be a good liaison. How many do we generally get in Washington, and is that a good way of spreading the goodwill of Northern?
So actually, I'll defer to Professor Streb to discuss the program, because he's been, you founded the program, I believe, back about a decade ago.
Actually, this year is our 10th anniversary of sending interns to DC. So we send 4 interns every year that are university sponsored. There may be other students who are out there on their own, but we give them a $6,000 stipend. Anna works very closely with us to make sure that we have appropriate placements. What I'll say is there's actually competition among the congressional offices to get our interns, because we've been providing them such really, really impressive interns. Kathy Doderline, when I moved into this role, Kathy Doderline has done a superb job of taking over the internship program, and it's, you know, something that I'm very proud of, and we have incredible students that go there and have transformational experiences. I just heard from one of them the other day. It said it was the greatest summer of her life. So it's really a cool thing. Kathy, I don't know, is Kathy even now? You want to add anything?
Just would say that, and echo the comments, that definitely our students represent us very well there, and the feedback that they provide about the opportunity that it gives them and the growth and kind of mentorship that they experience from it is truly transformational.
So those are internships that we fund, I mean Northern funds?
Correct.
So that would be what, travel and housing and?
We give them a $6,000 stipend, which covers the cost of their housing. It gives them a little bit of spending money. They literally live right off Capitol Hill, so they walk to work every day. It's a great experience. We just had, this past year, Annie, you can probably talk more about this, but Elizabeth and Brody both won Illinois State scholarships. Like you saw Tiana up on Tiana was actually last year's intern, part of last year's internship class. She won a scholarship. We had 2 more that won this year. They get a little extra money. So they've done a wonderful job of representing. We just had Congress. You were with me the other day when Congressman Kinzinger was here, and he just talked about how wonderful the intern was that we sent this year. So he was somebody that was mad at us for a while, as Anna knows, because we weren't giving him an intern, and we had to rectify that. So.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kreider. So I'm going to spend a little time introducing the next talk, not to steal Assistant Vice President Little's thunder, but rather to set the stage. So I'm happy to report the university has seen a significant and sustained increase in our externally funded portfolio. And the credit for this great news belongs to our faculty and staff. From the inception of ideas to submission and receipt of proposals of grants and to execution of results. And on my part, I'd like to give personal thanks to all the staff in RIPS for their assistance and efforts in this success. Although this all starts with the hard efforts of the faculty and staff, they have been able to utilize several university programs supporting scholarship, including external mentorships, intramural funding, and instrumentation and startup support. And I would like to thank the Board of Trustees for their support in providing those resources. Beyond those resources, and as discussed in previous committee meetings, new doctoral programs, new clusters, and new external relationships are important strategies for increasing campus scholarship, and also are reflected in the presidential goals. And we are already seeing the impact of these new clusters and partnerships. And of special interest, just to illustrate how broadly these strategies are reaching across campus, we have 2 joint positions with Argonne National Laboratory that are of interest. One is with the School of Art, and the other with the Department of Anthropology. So although you might think that our partnership with the labs would be limited to the physical sciences, we're actually now broadening them well beyond the physical sciences. We're also making now investments in the new doctoral programs, and we will see the return on scholarship in the upcoming years. So that's just a bit of context about how we got to this position, and I'll invite Assistant Vice President Little to elaborate.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Vice President Blasey, for the introduction and for setting the stage. And thank you, Board of Trustees, for the opportunity to present this year's, the good news this year in our FY19 sponsored funding report. Next slide, please. So I will start again by echoing that it was another good year for NIU. As you can see here, we finished new external funding at $35.5 million. That's a 17% increase over last year. As you can also see, we saw continued growth, and this growth is across all sponsored activities. These funds include new awards and renewals that were competed, as well as continuation funding for existing and multi-year awards. Faculty have successfully utilized the programs that Vice President Blasey mentioned in his earlier comments. And the combination of institutional investments and hard work and expertise of our faculty make this funding possible. That said, the administrators and staff in our academic departments and university business units who work hard behind the scenes to support these efforts are also to be commended. And I want to specifically acknowledge my staff and sponsored programs administration, who have worked very hard to keep up with this pace of increase in external funding. And that's particularly true under the leadership of my stellar directors who are here today. Kelly Dislin, who oversees pre-award, which is proposal development and submission and award acceptance, and Sue Gosman, who oversees post-award and award management. It's been a big lift, and I'm grateful for their efforts. In addition to proposal support, submission, and grants administration, SPA also has responsibility for managing faculty support and intramural grant programs offered through RIPS. Next slide, please. As I noted in my written report to the board, this funding this year is consistent with our usual makeup of federal and state agencies being our largest funders. While last year we saw more growth in federal funding, this year that distribution shifted. State funding this year increased by almost 50%, while the federal increase was nominal, about 8%. Based on our data, the increase in state funding is due to more outreach and engagement programming through our P20 Center and ongoing survey research. We're still assessing this year's federal funding portfolio. While the makeup of state and federal funding will ebb and flow given the timing of various contracts, I expect that these funds will continue to make up the majority of share of NIU-sponsored funding portfolio for the years to come. Next slide. Another bright spot this year is that total funding is at its second highest level in a decade. These figures were adjusted to remove stimulus funding, student financial aid, and federally congressionally directed earmarks for a more equal year-over-year comparison. Given federal and state governments account for most of our funding, it's good to see this growth coming out of the recession, the federal sequester, as well as the state budget impasse. Next slide. The funding distribution across campus units is fairly consistent, with College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and Outreach receiving the most funding. However, the College of Health and Human Sciences saw a nice increase this year as well. This increase is primarily attributed to State of Illinois funding. Looking forward, we anticipate growth for other areas in the coming years. As Vice President mentioned, as computer science and the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology build out their PhD programs, and as we continue to develop collaborations with the area national labs. Next slide. So all that said, the charts and graphs don't really do the work of our faculty justice. So I'm going to spend a few minutes highlighting some of our faculty and their awards. In the top right-hand corner is Ralph Wheeler, Chair of Chemistry, who led the acquisition of a $1 million NSF award to fund STEM scholarships to underrepresented and financially disadvantaged NIU students, continuing NIU's commitment to building an inclusive STEM workforce. And just to tie in, this was also the same award that Anna was referencing just a few minutes ago. To the top right is Melanie Dufferin, Health and Human Sciences faculty, who brought with her to NIU her four-year, $930,000 National Institutes of General Medical Sciences Science Education Partnership Award to continue her work on the Food Master Initiative, a compilation of programs aimed at using food as a tool to teach basic research, science, and math concepts to grades 3 through 8 youth. Again, if you were here earlier, I know Dean Black had recognized that work as well, so that is one and the same. In the bottom left-hand corner is Susanna Desnevis, Director of Migrant Education Services at NIU in the Center for P20 Engagement, who has overseen $1 million received from the Illinois State Board of Education to provide educational services and support to eligible migratory and seasonal agricultural youth, families, and children in Illinois. This was a team effort spearheaded by Amy Jo Clemens, in the Center for P20 Director, to bring migrant education program services to NIU. And finally, in the bottom right, is Presidential Research Professor and physicist Philippe Pio, whose work with Fermilab and Argonne is just one example of how NIU's collaboration with these area national labs are critical for our research programs. This year, funding from the national labs exceeded $2 million, and we expect further growth as these relationships expand. As Vice President Blasey already mentioned, those relationships have expanded into the School of Art, Anthropology, as well as Mechanical and Electrical Engineering. Next slide. While NIU's continued and somewhat rapid growth in sponsored funding is exciting, and it's certainly to be applauded, as my office looks to the year ahead, we are watching several what we consider to be hot issues that are either already impacting research administration or have the likelihood to impact it. The first, and these are in no particular order, is regulatory burden. National studies continue to show that researchers spend almost half of their federal research time on administration. That's something that the federal government's very interested in. It's also something that we as a research university are very interested in. So demonstrations are ongoing between federal agencies and grantees to understand how to address this in light of increasing regulations. The second is foreign influence into research and the impact on economic competitiveness, and sexual harassment and agencies' commitment to ensuring safe working environments that are free of sexual and other forms of harassment. And I don't believe Sarah Garner is here anymore, but I do want to thank her and her office for working with us. We have seen new regulations come down from the National Science Foundation and from NASA. And in order to meet those requirements, it was critical that we be able to coordinate with her office. So I do appreciate her efforts and willing to work with us. At the state level, one of the state government regulations that, Jenny, that you had mentioned is the Grants Accountability and Transparency Act. This act continues to add to the administrative burden of securing and managing state funds. This has been particularly felt by Sponsored Programs Administration and probably program staff as well, given the significant increase in state funding this past year. So all of this has us thinking critically about how we balance compliance without impeding research. Me and my team are working closely with Vice President Blasey, Dr. Quiter, our colleagues in RIPS and other university units to assess and manage these issues. Next slide. So in summary, total sponsored funding and research funding continues to increase. Most of the increase in fiscal year 2019 funding came from State of Illinois grants. NIU and area national laboratory collaborations remain strong and continue to grow. Rapid funding growth and hot issues will require coordination between Sponsored Programs Administration and university units. Next slide. Next slide. So this concludes my report. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That is a very impressive list of grants and programs that you have, but you alluded to it at the end, the continued increase in regulations and in stipulations. How are you, you have the increased funding, which is actually great, but then you have this increased burden of regulation and performance standards, and are you able to handle all the increased funding, and how is that affecting both your faculty and your administrators?
We are able to handle it. My staff are working very hard to support faculty and to manage all of the compliance requirements that you just mentioned that accompany sponsored funding. At the same time, NIU's systems and processes were not designed for grants. And so what's happening now is that a lot of time, either in central administration, in my staff, or even faculty as they're managing awards, a lot of the time is spent on manual actions and workarounds to make things work. We're fully committed to making things work because our job is to ensure that the university complies with the federal or the sponsor requirements. But it is getting very difficult as this funding increases. We want to make sure that we're both good stewards of our sponsored funds to protect the institution, but ideally not at the expense of research. So it is getting more difficult to manage the volume and the complexity of the awards. And so we've certainly taken steps to update our processes. We're working to find long-term solutions, but we have more work remains. And I do want to make a note about the complexity of our portfolio because it wasn't in my presentation. Over half of NIU's funding portfolio is contracts. So that means that over half of our portfolio, the terms vary widely from award to award. And so central administration staff need to understand all the varying terms on the different awards, as do faculty. That also introduces a lot more complexity for the oversight, which can increase some of the burden for the principal investigators. So trying to figure out how to manage that burden so they have their time to actually do the research that they've been funded to do while still meeting compliance is something that we're trying to balance.
I think the research component of this university is so incredibly important. And the fact that you've been able to increase funding in light of all the additional burdens that have put on you is something, I know that our resources are always stretched, but this is certainly an area that we need to give some additional consideration to.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions?
I've got a question on the trending of funding. We said 50% more from the state, and then we saw a dwindling from the federal government. Is that a trend? Was that an aberration, or is that what it's going to look like now moving forward?
No, and not a dwindling from the federal. So we still saw an increase this year in federal funding as well, just not as significantly as last year. This year, the difference between fiscal year 18 and fiscal 19 of state funding, that's where we saw a significant increase. So
state
funding overall has increased from all sponsors.
State funding include the money for the Northern Illinois Community Sustainability. So none of that money was in that number.
No, and it won't be. It'll show up in the facilities and the Capital Development Board.
Great.
Which, frankly, given our burden, relieves us, because if it had been in Commerce, it would have been a lot of work to administer.
So how do we compare to other state universities, then, as far as the funding?
There's a number of different ways to compare. It's a little harder to compare what I've reported here of just new awards because each institution includes different types of awards, if you will. So some may even include financial aid. So just looking on its face, it may not be an apples to apples comparison. If we were looking at our Illinois peers, I believe that NIU would be behind the University of Illinois in terms of new funding coming in. For expenditures, I'll actually have that information at the November meeting once we have the NSF higher ed results. So I can answer that a little bit more definitely.
Okay, and then another question I had was you mentioned here foreign influence as an issue. Could you elaborate on it? I don't really know what that means.
Who would like to take that?
Go ahead. So we were anticipating a question, so I invited Shannon Stoker, who is the acting director for the Office of Research, Compliance, Integrity, and Safety, to bring us up to date on that. Right. Go ahead, come to the podium.
So the main concern with foreign influence and research is coming from the federal government, and it is pretty much foreigners from countries that have been deemed to have anti-American values or anti-American ideals kind of coming in and stealing research. And it is a very sensitive issue because we want to balance it with, you know, global collaborations, and we want people to be proud of their research, and we don't want to stop any of that, but we also need to have faculty recognize that their research is important, and we want to mix security along with encouraging collaborations. So it's kind of a newer issue, and most universities don't really know what to do yet, so there's been some steps taken. Myself and Stephanie Brown from the International Office did attend an FBI summit. So we got some information on there. There is a summit in Loyola on the issue in September, and there's going to be several people from, I know some of them from Student Affairs are coming. We've invited several people as this crosses multiple departments. And, you know, we're just going to try to develop a plan that we hope can, again, encourage collaboration, but also increase safety of our research.
Thank you, Shannon. Anna, did you want to add anything to that?
The only thing I would add is that we have not seen any, we have seen some standalone legislation introduced, but nothing that has really been moving forward. What we have seen move forward, though, are amendments to must-pass legislation, like the National Defense Authorization Act. And so we've been working closely with other institutions in Illinois, especially the University of Illinois system. In fact, my office is in the same office suite as them, and we share a wall, so we work very closely together. So we've been working with the Illinois delegation as well as universities around the country to address amendments as they come up, and to make sure, as Shannon said, balancing the need for protection with the need for openness of research.
This is a conversation nationally that's going on at the level of the vice presidents for research and the presidents of institutions. I haven't been at a meeting where this hasn't been on the agenda, and we haven't seen representatives talking about the pending legislation. We've had people from the Federal Bureau of Investigation going over case briefings, and so it's definitely something that's getting significant concern right now, and the research universities are really acting together as a learning community to try to find the balance that's been spoken about.
Yeah, I will add that with respect to the national labs, the federal government has control of their relationships with foreign entities, and they basically shut down any collaboration with China in particular. They don't quite know how to do that with the universities, and so it's sort of an ongoing discussion about how the federal government can maintain that openness and collaboration, but also control basically intellectual property so that we're not put in an economic disadvantage.
I could just tie that briefly back then to research administration. One of the things that we are seeing, again, going back to the regulations, is agencies are already asking for additional information in proposals. So again, that's something that we're trying to wrap our arms around, to understand how we collect that information and make sure that we're meeting those reporting requirements to the agencies. The National Science Foundation, one of our largest federal funders, their OIG has already directed the agency to go back and look at past grant applications and awards to vet for foreign collaborations. So it's something that the agencies are taking very seriously and issuing new requirements already.
Are there any additional questions? If not, thank you so much for that.
Right, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay, it's our final information item for the day, and as an example of all that faculty hard work and scholarship in the past year, Dr. Nicole Ledoux will now describe her work and collaborations in STEM education research. This research has had an impact on our students now and will have an impact on students in the future. And furthermore, from my point of view, STEM education research is a very active field, has continued support, and perhaps even I expect increasing growth as this issue becomes more and more important in Washington. So we see it as great potential for further growth at NIU as well. So Dr. Ledoux.
Thank you, and I just want to take a moment to say thank you in person because I recently earned tenure, and I want to thank you in person because very few faculty get to do that. So now you have a face to put with the name that you signed off on. So first slide, I like to start with a cartoon to lighten the mood a little bit, particularly given the heaviness of the conversation. So if you've ever sat through a scientific presentation or a class that is geared towards science, then you may have been in the same shoes as the presenter here. And this is a good example of the type of research I do. So I'm very interested in how students understand visual representations, how they process spatial information in their brain. So next slide. To give you a sense of the portfolio of my research, my first love comes from the world of cognitive science. So I'm in a geology department, and I do STEM education research, and I pull methods from the world of psychology and cognitive science to understand how students think and learn, and how to improve their learning. And visual spatial thinking is a very important skill, particularly in the sciences. A second area of my research that is a somewhat newer area of research for me is in promoting confidence and interest in STEM. So we have great levels of attrition out of our STEM majors, and we need to figure out how to fix that problem. All of these themes occur through the lens of active learning. So this is an umbrella term that we use in undergraduate education that is really about engaging students in building their understanding and constructing knowledge themselves. We've all had the experience of sitting in a classroom where someone lectures at them, and how effective it can be versus when you have a hands-on experience and you're really engaged with the material directly. So what we try to do is build pedagogies that really get students engaged. Next slide, please. So as I said before, my first love is this visual spatial thinking research, which is sort of how I ended up in geology in the first place myself. So spatial thinking is best described as a set of skills. So this may be disembedding a pattern in a bunch of noise, as you see in the top right picture, which is a mineral fabric, a rock texture. You may be more familiar with it if you've gotten a CT scan or an MRI. You have somebody at the other end of that computer looking at the slices and trying to understand the structure that is in your body. And then we also use this in chemistry and in biology in terms of understanding molecular structure and how those structures play a role in the types of processes that we're studying. So spatial thinking is pervasive in STEM fields and also in engineering. Next slide. Longitudinal studies have also shown that it is highly predictive of whether you'll be successful in STEM. And although it was once thought to be this static inborn ability, that you were born high spatial thinking or low spatial thinking, there's substantial evidence now that it's a malleable skill, so we can train it. And that's very promising, because if we can train it, then maybe we can build the next generation of STEM scholars. So it is very, very important for STEM to try to figure out ways to train this, and the techniques are, there's many studies going on to try to figure out which techniques work. So the first one I'll talk about is a way I've combined the spatial thinking training and active learning in my classroom. You can go to the next one. Thank you. So when I went to school, we had paper and pencil. and now we have all kinds of new exciting technologies in the classroom. So one of those technologies is clickers. And so clickers used to be sort of like the remote control where you could click on a piece, like a remote control and answer A, B, C, D to a multiple choice question. And the way that it was implemented is that the instructor during the lecture would try to make sure that you're all awake and with them, and you'd pose a question on the screen and you'd say click A, B, C, or D. And then as the instructor, I get feedback, immediate feedback, polling all of my students to see where are they thinking, are they with me, or do I need to reteach the material? So this is an active learning technique. So in the recent years, we all have smart devices, which provide a new world of feedback we can get from our students. And that comes in the form of these heat maps. So I can now pose a question, and students can answer that on their tablet, on their smartphone, and it gives the distribution of their clicks, of where they clicked on the diagram. And so the left-hand picture shows where they clicked before instruction, and the right-hand picture shows where they clicked after instruction. And thankfully, that means that students learned something or at least switched their answer. So this gives me immediate feedback as an instructor. But as a researcher, I started to get excited about the power of this tool to start to reveal students' mental models of scientific processes while they're sitting there quietly in their seat and I'm standing there in front of the room. So there's now this new way of us exchanging information. So if you click on the next slide, please. And it's helpful even with very complex spatial ideas. So engaging students in making predictions about where things will be at a time in future and demonstrating that they understand structures and processes that go on in all areas of science. So anatomy and physiology and geology. Okay, click next. Oh, good, it works. So as I said, the geosciences, the STEM fields are a very spatial discipline. And there's this really cool toy that UC Davis developed. They used a sand, just like a kid's sandbox, and they used an Xbox Kinect, and they project the, they have a code that reads the elevation of the sand and projects the image of the sand elevation onto the sand. And the purpose of this was to help promote understanding of how fluid dynamics works. But also, if you see those lines that are kind of running around on the screen, they kind of go along with the colors, those lines are topographic map lines. So if you're into hiking or have an engineering background, you may have seen these topographic maps. They're not particularly useful in Illinois because there's very little relief change. But they are very useful when you're navigating elsewhere in the world. This is a cognitively challenging problem to help people understand topographic maps, and I can tell you from teaching in the classroom for over a decade, it is a big hurdle for students to understand the topographic maps, and yet they're very, very essential for very high-level geology skills that you need for the oil and gas industry, for example, and in engineering for building. So we're always trying to figure out how to get past this hurdle. And so when the sandbox came out, everyone was excited, and they're building them all over the country, and universities are building them, and museums are building them. And so, of course, geoscience education researchers are studying them. And thus far, after 3 years of studying this with large groups of collaborators, there have been no documented learning gains as a result of interacting with the sandbox, which is really disappointing to many of us. So next slide, please. So what we did was we took that sandbox and we brought it into the laboratory and we engaged students in a one-on-one interaction using a cycle of prediction and feedback. And so we had students build things in the sand and then make predictions about how close they were to the actual map that they were trying to construct. And we actually found learning gains. So my master's student and I did this study in collaboration with Tom Pingle, who is at Virginia Tech, and Tim Shipley at Temple University. And we're really excited that we have learning gains, and now the next step is to bring this back into the classroom and do a bigger study to see that we can actually affect change in a bigger scale. Next slide. So the second area that I'll cover briefly, as I know that everyone's getting hungry, is confidence and interest. Next slide, please. So you've heard already about Ralph Wheeler and Dr. Ralph Wheeler and his ESTEM grant from the National Science Foundation, and I am fortunate to be a co-PI on that project. And we titled it Belong in STEM. So what we want to do is build students' sense of belonging, that they are meant to be where they are. So they've set these goals for themselves, and is very well documented in the literature that students don't feel welcome when they're in their science disciplines, that some students don't. And so we want to try to prevent that that from happening. And so my responsibility in this project is to conduct some qualitative research along with my graduate student, who will be leading a peer mentoring group. So they will be meeting with the peer mentor weekly to talk about a variety of challenges and most of the things that you might not engage with your professor about. So I'm struggling with this peer interaction, and I don't know how to handle it. And I don't really want to go to my professor and show this weakness. So this provides another avenue where students can feel that they have support. So they draw from this social support. And I also want to take a moment to say that the entire project team just spent the last 2 days completing code training, which is the Conversations on Diversity and Equity training that is led by Jocelyn Santana, and that is out of Dr. Vernice Edgehill Walden's office. So we had a profoundly transformative experience. I can say that because that is actually the words that Dr. Wheeler used, that it was a transformative experience for him to participate in that. And I think that training is going to really help us support the students that are in the scholarship program. Next slide, please. So another project that I've been involved with is funded by the National Science Foundation, and the lead PI is Nathan Stansel in my department in geology. And he's bringing teams of researchers over to Estonia to study climate change and do field research. And the unique aspects of this team approach is that we are recruiting two community college students, one from Triton College and one from Waubonsie. Both are Hispanic-serving institutions, as well as a teacher, an in-service current practicing teacher from the region. And two graduate students work as a team, and they go to Estonia and do field research and laboratory research, and then they come back, they've just returned a week ago, and then they'll continue doing research throughout the academic year. And so we just finished our first cohort, and my role in this project is to mentor the teacher and also to support the evaluation and education research to try to understand how this team works, how to engage community colleges in early research, community college students in early research experiences. So they have very limited science training prior to this. So we want to use this as a recruitment tool into the STEM fields. Next slide, please. So in closing, I wanted to give you a framework for how I envision the work that I do at NIU. I think that all of the work I do at the end game of all of it is student success and persistence. So from the one side, when you do STEM education research, your goal is to improve classroom practice. And I start with my own classroom, and I start with my research, and then I try to disseminate to my colleagues. And the end goal of that is not to just improve learning, but to make sure that our learning aligns with the skills that our students need to be successful in those careers. And then the other side of it, and something that's particularly poignant for NIU students as we grow the diversity of our institution, is figuring out ways to support students that come from a variety of backgrounds. Sorry. And I think that that's a particularly challenging issue in STEM. We have significant equity gaps, and so we are engaged right now in doing research to understand how we can ameliorate those equity gaps and make our science departments reflective of the population of the U.S. and also of the NIU student body. So with that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you and tell you about the exciting work we're doing, and I'm open to any questions.
Are there questions from any of the trustees?
I have one. So Dr. Ledoux, the $1 million that you received, congratulations. That's awesome. Over what period of time is that?
It's a 5-year grant.
It's a 5-year grant.
Yep.
Is it in even amounts over the 5 years, or is it front loaded?
It's actually not front-loaded, so we wanted to ramp up. So this year we have selected 12 scholars. I neglected to mention this. Each year we are selecting a set of scholars. Half of those scholars will be juniors and seniors that are already at NIU, so we're supporting them at the moment when things become the most challenging.
Okay, that was going to be
right. And then the other half of the scholars are community college students that we're hoping to recruit here, and we're trying to use that as a recruitment pipeline into our STEM fields. And one of the big challenges our STEM students face is the fact that they're trying to manage work jobs, and sometimes full-time jobs, on top of being full-time students. So we're hoping that the support is a lot of extra time for them to come to these peer meetings, but we're hoping to try to, but with the scholarship, reduce the amount of time they have to spend working at part-time jobs.
And I assume there's milestones you need to reach in order to get the remaining monies, or how does all that work?
So actually, it's we have a little more time to prove ourselves than that would seem. So we have actually 5 years to prove ourselves. We have the money for 5 years. I don't deeply understand how the money is released from NSF, but I believe on an annual basis.
Okay, so we already have, okay, so we
yeah,
have.
So we have it. But then there's a track two and a track three. So we are actually funded on a track two. NIU had money under a previous project similarly, and there is another track beyond this that we can go for should we be hopefully successful.
Just a comment on the mechanics. Generally, the agencies provide grants, and you get the money, and then you have to report at the end of it, as opposed to a contract where you have to show progress. So this happens to be a grant.
I have a question. This was great. I really enjoyed your presentation. Thank you. The frameworks that you're using, I mean, they're obviously really important in STEM fields because of the attrition, but it seems to me that the frameworks you have and the approach you're taking is applicable to other disciplines as well. And what is the plan to present what you've done to other departments, right, so that they can also adopt a similar approach or apply for grants in that using that similar framework?
Absolutely. So there's many levels to answering your question, and I think, you know, I immediately think from a research level that we are engaging with a collaborator in the College of Education, Daryl Dugas, and he helps us incorporate frameworks from educational psychology to make sure that our research is relevant beyond just the STEM fields. But in terms of how to convey that to other departments, my sense is that in many respects, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but other departments at NIU are farther beyond where we are in the STEM departments. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So if you work in the social sciences, you're very aware of social science issues. And so I'm not saying that it's free of problems, but I think one of the challenges that as you become a scientist, you don't have a lot of the engagement with social issues that you would necessarily have as a social scientist. And so I think that part of what we're doing is actually catching up to what's going on in other fields.
Trustee Herrero, you're sort of anticipating something we've been thinking about, and that's pulling together a interdisciplinary or a university-wide center to do research across all the disciplines and apply the lessons.
You may remember that in the fiscal 20 presidential goals, which I think we all recognize are really university goals, we talk about identifying emerging research initiatives that could form strong research centers and foci, and certainly our choice of having Professor Ledoux present here was in part because we suspect there may be a proposal coming.
Yay, good. So,
that's good. Are there any additional questions? No. Thank you so much for your presentation. Are there any other matters that need to come before this committee? Okay, our next meeting date is November 14th, 2019. And I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned.